This is your Hollywood radio reporter coming to you from the Little Theater at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, bringing you James Stewart, Robert Young, Florence Rice, and Tom Brown in several scenes from their motion picture, Navy Blue and Gold. Once in a long, long while, a picture comes along that perfectly illustrates the spirit of Americanism. Strangely enough, the story that appeals to our sense of patriotism is never the profound historical saga, nor the obvious propaganda. We Americans like to decide for ourselves which story will move us and which will leave us cold. First, we like a story that's about other Americans, the people we see every day, the fellow down the street, the family next door. Let them be rich or poor, we want our heroes to be like the people we know. This is what I mean. Imagine three young men, Americans. You might know one of them, you might know them all. First, there is Richard Gates, a rich man's son, and Roger Ashe. He hasn't a dime, but he wants a college education, and he is willing to earn it through his ability as a football player. Then there is Truck Cross. Truck's life has been a tough battle, as you will see. He's an enlisted man on one of Uncle Sam's destroyers, with little in his favor save a grim determination. They haven't much in common, these three, except that they are Americans. But that's quite enough, for each of them holds the same importance in this land of ours, and to each of them can come the same great thrill. Listen.
Attention!
You're about to take the oath that will make you a midshipman in the United States Navy. Will you raise your right hands, please, and repeat after me what I say? Having been appointed a midshipman in the United States Navy... I do solemnly swear... That I will support and defend... The Constitution of the United States... Against all enemies... Foreign and domestic. That I will bear true faith. And allegiance to the same. And that I will well and faithfully. Discharge the duties of the office. On which I am about to enter. So help me God. Congratulations, gentlemen. You are now midshipmen in the United States Navy. You are officers and gentlemen, in the true sense of the words. And so you will be as long as you stay in the naval service. You may choose your own roommates. Three of you will room together. The choice that you make here is one of the most important ones in your lives, because the men who will share your room will be closest to you throughout your naval service.
Oh, did you hear that? An officer and a gentleman, all in a half an hour. My name's Roger Ashe. I'm a fugitive from a joint laughingly called Southern Institute.
My name's Cross, Truck Cross. I'm from the fleet.
I'm glad to know you.
Glad to know you.
I'm Richard Arnold Gates, Jr. from New York.
Hey, little one.
Hello.
I didn't know they took midgets here. Well, matey, how about keeping house together?
Why, suits me.
We have something in common anyway. You're a football man, or I don't know a cleat mark in a guy's nose when I see one.
Say, I'm a football man, too.
Quiet, sonny boy. Don't you know children should be seen and not heard?
Hey, listen, son, it takes a lot more than beef to make a football team. Somebody's got to do the thinking for you big guys.
You think we should take this waif in off the street before somebody steps on him?
Oh, he won't take up much room.
Okay, come on, Pee-wee.
And Pee-wee Gates. They got along famously, those three, fighting with one another and for one another. Football, holidays, hard work, and good times. They took it in stride, together. Truck and Ash became rivals when they both fell in love with Pee-wee's sister, Patricia. They passed through a long, tough year as humble plebes, on to the dignity befitting upperclassmen. And then one morning something happened. They had reported for the first class of the day.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, sir. Section all present, sir.
Thank you. Seat your section, sir.
Section seats.
As you know, gentlemen, the recitation this morning touches upon responsibilities of a commanding officer. In time of stress and crisis, the conduct of the commanding officer is the difference between salvation and disaster. I'm reminded of the story of an officer, I regret to say a graduate of this academy, who ruined a brilliant career by one lapse from the straight path of duty. Shortly after the war, this officer was in command of a destroyer attached to the fleet. One night, returning from maneuvers, they were running along a treacherous stretch of coast. He had gone to his cabin. On the bridge, the navigator pored over his charts. Suddenly, this officer appeared. He was unsteady on his feet. He ordered immediate change of course. A few minutes later, the ship piled up on a reef. Only the greatest coordination and discipline prevented the loss of every life aboard. The navigator was among those killed. But this officer survived the disaster and was tried by court-martial. He stubbornly refused to offer the slightest defense. He was convicted, and his name stricken from the rolls of the Navy. There is one very good rule of seamanship, which is really the moral of this story. And that is, up anchor, down cork.
Just a minute, sir. If you're insinuating that officer was drunk on duty, it's a lie.
Did I hear you distinctly, Mr. Cross?
You heard me quite distinctly, sir. I said that your story is a lie. Now, this may mean my dismissal, but I'm going to tell you the real story. During the war, that officer whose story you just told spent 26 days at a time on patrol in the North Sea. He did that for nearly 2 years. He was the kind of an officer who would labor in the engine room with cranky engines, who would navigate, sleep on a cot on his bridge. The kind of an officer who would forget to be sick or tired or hungry, who would forget everything. Except that he has a duty to perform. Once, after his destroyer had been sunk by a torpedo, he spent 16 hours in icy waters because the two remaining lifeboats were filled with survivors. He was wounded. But he refused to tell anyone because he was afraid they might take him to the hospital. Then after the war, he came back to this country. He did have the command you mentioned. And then he began to have terrific headaches and chills and fever, but he fought them off. He had a racked, overworked, overstrained body, but he didn't tell anybody because he felt that the Navy needed him to do a job. He was in his cabin that night, after 20 straight hours on the bridge. But he couldn't rest. His seaman's instinct told him that his ship was running into danger, so he made his way back to the bridge and took over. He found that the navigator was way off his course and heading inshore. He tried his best to put her about, but it was too late. He piled up. So he was tried by court-martial. But he wouldn't defend himself because the blame would have fallen on the navigator, and the navigator was dead. So he took the blame, and they dismissed him from the service. When they threw him out, he didn't complain of his broken body. He didn't moan because he got no retired pay. And he had nothing, hardly enough to eat. But instead, he sat nights telling his son stories of the Navy, trying to teach his son to love the service the way he loved it.
You seem to be quite an authority on the career of this officer, Mr. Cross.
Yes, sir, I should be, sir. My full name is John Cross Carter. The officer of your story is Commander Carter, my father.
Oh, I can't keep my mind on this calculus business either. I've been working the same problem for an hour.
I can't understand why Washington doesn't do something.
Maybe Washington's too tough, even for your dad.
Gee, the officers on that court must be human. They've got to understand that the Navy is the only thing Truck has. Gee, What would Truck do if they ever bilged him?
He's the kind of a guy who'd march himself right back up the enlisted man's gangway on the Northampton, salute his old skipper, and announce, "Truck Cross, sir. Ex-fireman, second class, reporting for duty."
We were going to be shipmates.
I think I'll go over to the library. Maybe Truck's over there.
Wait a minute, I'll go over.
You better stay here in case I miss him.
To see you. I wanted you to know that Dad's doing everything possible.
I feel terrible being so much trouble to everybody.
I met your father.
What, my dad?
He's with my father every minute. They're just, well, they seem to have known each other a lifetime. I'm going back to Washington tonight to be with him until it's all over. Truck, I want you to know that no matter what happens, it won't make any difference to people like your dad and mine and me.
Oh, thanks, Pat. They can't do much to me after that. Pat, there's something I must know. What about you and Raj? Raj is my classmate and my roommate.
Exactly, Mr. Cross. He's your roommate. So, if it isn't against regulations or improper for an officer and a gentleman, would you mind kissing me?
Cross, you're wanted in the superintendent's office.
Very well.
You must have known that enrolling under an incorrect name is a dismissal offense. Your reason isn't stated in this testimony. I'm curious to know why you did it.
Well, sir, getting into the academy meant everything to me. I thought that my father's name would keep me out. But with a commission and 40 years of service ahead of me, I knew that somehow, someday, I could clear his name. The chance came sooner than I expected, sir.
The court finds you guilty. The punishment is dismissal. But they recommend you to my clemency. I endorse that recommendation for the reason they give in making it. Your unwavering determination to become a naval officer. Your courage in defending your father. And furthermore, the review of your father's case completely exonerates him. The findings will be published throughout the service. You'll be reinstated without loss of rank.
Do you mind, sir, if I just don't say anything?
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard James Stewart, Robert Young, Florence Rice, and Tom Brown in several highlight scenes from the motion picture, Navy Blue and Gold. The story of the rich man's son, the poor man's son, and second-class seaman Truck Cross. This is your Hollywood radio reporter saying thank you for listening.